Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we, of course, explore different aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. And believe me, there is a lot to explore. And tonight, we're going to be discussing one of my favorite subjects, actually, which is the near-death experience. Our guest is, in fact, a member of the International Association for Near-Death Studies, and has written a very interesting book. Her name is Anna Maria Hemingway, and the book she has written is called Practicing Conscious Living and Dying, Stories of the Eternal Continuum of Consciousness. Great title. This book is actually an uplifting collection of spiritually illuminating texts and powerful, thought-provoking real-life stories which show that death is actually an integral part of life. And these touching stories of closeness to someone who is in the dying process and the personal accounts of near-death experiences and after-death communications illustrate how coming to terms with the inevitability of death is actually a life-affirming experience. I totally agree with that. These emotional, evocative, and inspirational experiences address timeless questions and help expand our limited awareness of the nature of consciousness. They show how each of the individuals concerned has come to understand that death teaches us that the preciousness of life must be lived with a sense of purpose and meaning as a celebration of our existence. Our guest, Anna Maria Hemingway, besides writing this book, The Near-Death Experience, Practicing Conscious Living and Dying, Stories of the Eternal Continuum of Consciousness, is actually also doing a number of other things, including earning her PhD and is currently writing her dissertation on, quote, The Near-Death Experience, A Mythic Model for Conscious Living and Dying. She has written a number of articles for various magazines, primarily focusing on aspects of conscious living and dying, and as I mentioned earlier, is also a member of the International Association for Near-Death Studies. Oh, we're so lucky to have her on tonight. Anna Maria, thank you for coming on to the show.
Hi, good to be with you.
You know, this is really, I think, one of the most popular paranormal subjects. I mean, there's so many people who have had a near-death experience, and all of us have to face the, you know, inevitability of death, as you say, but most people don't really seem to look into it that much. They're kind of afraid of it, I guess, and that's what I think is so important about your research. So, how did you get started?
Well, I got started, I suppose, partly because I was really interested in the subject and had done a lot of research myself anyway. And then when my own mother became seriously ill, I was confronted, like we all are at some time sooner or later, with losing a loved one. And so I made a decision that I actually wanted to be with her on this journey, physically whenever possible, but psychically all the time. And as my mother went through this transition phase, I realized how much being fully present with a dying person actually can really change and transform us. So at the end of my mother's illness, when she eventually did make her transition, I decided I wanted to do something very authentic with the experience and something that I thought might help other people get a better idea of the dying process as being part of the natural cycle of life rather than, you know, the ultimate failure, which we tend to view it now when medical intervention can't help any longer and we are faced with the inevitability of death. We tend to look at it as this failure rather than as part of a natural cycle of life. And so I've gathered together a lot of stories, including near-death experiences, after-death communication, and actually being with a dying person or losing a dying person, a loved one, and try to expand our awareness around death and dying and what it actually means to be consciously involved with the idea that that is part of our life cycle.
Right, I know, I totally agree. Now, what was it like, I mean, for you and experiencing the death of your mother and just so intimately like that? My mother died when she was away from the house, and she died alone. But her death really did transform me in a lot of ways. And I've had a number of psychic experiences with, I guess, her spirit, I guess you would say. But I was just wondering if that happened to you, or how did it go for you?
Well, I think that death actually activates a psychic energy that often a seriously ill person or a person about to make their transition is in an altered state, very psychically open. They sort of have one foot left here and one foot somewhere else, and that extraordinary things can happen around the dying process. And for me, together we explored her deathbed visions where, you know, people, deceased family members, some of them people she didn't know, actually came to tell her that they would be escorting her on this final part of this journey. And all sorts of other things. I think one of the things that death really does is it strips away everything that's unimportant. And if we're willing to actually be fully present, we can actually be our most authentic selves and drop everything not important. So even though I'm not for a moment suggesting that I didn't and that we all go through, you know, loss, grief, painful loss, that
right.
Also there is something else that's taking place. And I think... as I say, if we're prepared to be part of this journey, we can get extraordinary experiences and things that help us transform the way we view life and death.
Right, right. Oh, I totally get what you're saying. It's funny, when my mom died, we have a large family. There's 6 kids, and pretty much every one of us had at least some indication that something was up or some sort of, I guess you would say, event where she came and said that she was still around. And, for me, it's actually been very, very dramatic. So how common would you say is after-death communication?
Well, I think it's very common, but I think, all of these things, whether we're talking about a near-death experience or an after-death communication, or a deathbed vision, they're all part of the same thing. We're sort of like, peering through the curtain and getting an idea of something else going on out there. And I think that after-death communication is very common. But the problem is that some of the signs are very subtle. Sometimes they're just very synchronistic things that happen. We tend to perhaps... try and rationalize them, or, you know, a lot of people are very sort of unsure about whether they want to discuss or talk about things like that in case someone else thinks that they're, imagining things. So perhaps in the past people were less likely to discuss something like that. I think this whole area is opening up now, and that... if you had a random selection of people and you opened up the conversation and it was comfortable enough, you'd probably find that very many of them would actually come forward and describe some experience of their own. And in the book, I actually talk about one of the ways this can sort of manifest. I was working with somebody on a story, and in the conversation, he was saying to me, my mother really loved butterflies, especially those white butterflies.
Right.
think they're called cabbage butterflies or something. Anyway, at that moment, a white butterfly just went sailing past the French doors, you know, and we just saw it and thought. And I said to him, well, you know, my mother really liked butterflies too. In fact, she loved red monarchs, and I have a little butterfly pin that she used to wear on a little altar that I have for her. And just at that moment, a red monarch just came sailing by, and we both kind of looked at each other and said, well, you know, what better sign? Here we are discussing them, talking about something, you know, that they had in common, and suddenly it manifests. And I think if we pay attention to these very subtle things that can happen, they're quite dramatic on the one hand, but it would be easy to just say, oh, well, two butterflies just happened to be going by at that time, rather than, you know, perhaps think, wow, something has penetrated, you know, our consciousness here, and we're able in this way, through this medium, to be connecting with the spirit or essence or whatever you like to describe of that loved deceased person, that they, you know, it is a sign that something is going on. And it's quite common for people when somebody has died, perhaps, again, I had this experience after my mother's death of walking up the stairs, and in just one little place in the landing, I could just smell her perfume so strongly. It was only in that one little area, but it was unmistakable. And again, they're often very subtle, but I think we do get a lot of signs, and actually we just have to sort of be, A, open to the fact that this could happen, and secondly, take notice of it when it does, because it certainly changes our perception of the way we think about death and loss and grief when we have some sign that's pointing, you know, to the possibility that the person is certainly somewhere still in touch with us.
Right, right. What I find so mysterious, though, is this veil between the worlds. I mean, why is it that they can see us and much more easily and hear us than we can apparently hear them? And, I mean, there's so many different ways they make themselves felt. What would you say are some of the more unusual ways the spirits would manifest?
Well, I think spirits manifest in all sorts of ways. As I said before, I think it depends how open we are. I mean, there are many people who are really true mediums and actually have this gift of being able to communicate. And I think it's almost like, you know, having a clear channel, in a sense, that we're receptive, and then, you know, we get some kind of information. Obviously, we live in a world, in our own personal world, where our own ego and our own ego attachments actually control the way we think and act to a large extent. And of course, people that have made a transition and moved on aren't encumbered by that, so it's probably far easier for them to try and communicate for us than it is for us to be receptive to receiving that. And I think another reason, actually, which is, you know, very important too, is that some people are very afraid of receiving some sort of communication. So perhaps they're not so likely to, because their own fear barrier would stop that happening. So after-death communication often takes place in a dreaming state, and of course when we're asleep, our natural defenses are buffered, and perhaps, again, it's far easier for us to be receptive to someone coming through.
Well, how does, I mean, when someone is contacting you in the dream state, how does this differ from an ordinary dream, and you know what I mean? And how would you know that you're actually in contact with the actual spirit?
Well, I think these dreams are so vivid, and they retain that vivid image. The colors are very bright, they're vibrant. A person seems to know. I mean, we all have an inner knowing that knows certain things. And certainly when I've had this type of communication, perhaps you have had too, from my own mother, I knew without a shadow of a doubt that, you know, this was something that was happening. It was like I wasn't asleep. You know, I was actually communicating with her. And they're so powerful that people do have the sense that this is a real communication. Often they'll be given some kind of message that, again, shows them that this is a form of after-death communication. And very often, too, the deceased person will appear to be young and in perfect health and, you know, vibrating with life and energy. So they're very striking.
You know, it's very interesting that's so, because, I mean, that's pretty much universal in all near-death and even out-of-body experiences, and yet people still fear death and they think it's cold and macabre and grotesque, when in fact it turns out it's like the most healing experience and the best, most wonderful thing that could ever really happen to a person. And would you
say that? Well, I think, yes, again, you know, we have built up a sort of defense mechanism that really doesn't acknowledge that death even takes place. So when it does, we're sort of like totally lost of how are we going to deal with it, how are we going to deal with our emotional turmoil that surrounds it. And so it's very difficult for people with that kind of conditioning to view death in any other way. But I think if we try and expand our knowledge and perhaps, you know, reacquaint ourselves with sort of all the natural signs around us that show signs of birth and death and regeneration, like in the natural world, we're constantly reminded. We're constantly reminded in myth, in story, and the near-death experiences, when they return, their story, you know, carries a really important message that death is not the end. And regardless, to me, whether this can be proved by scientific means or not, and perhaps one day it will, you know, we hear lots of rational explanations like drugs, hallucinations, but that's not really the central message. The central message is that these people, from whatever it is they've experienced, come back totally transformed, lose their fear of death, and live their lives very differently. So obviously something has happened. And I think that's what we need to focus on, and why these stories are so important, because just reading them can actually, you know, awaken us.
Right, right. Well, you know, this is so interesting, because that's pretty much exactly what happened to me, and I want to tell you a little story about what happened to me, which will lead to my next question. You know, after my mom died, I learned how to do out-of-body exploring. I picked up a book on it and tried the exercises, and I was amazed that they worked. And after a couple of years, I actually got really good at it, and I was able to go visit, I guess you'd call it the other side, and visit the heavenly realms, and my mother was there. And what's really interesting is also some of my former pets there, my dogs. And it was just amazing to see them, because they were, you know, just so alive and real. It's a much more real world there on the other side, I think. And one time, I had an out-of-body experience, and my dog Clyde was there. And I was like, oh, Clyde, and I was petting him. And eventually, you know, after a few minutes, I don't have much time, and I came back into my body, and I got ready to go to work, and I could still feel his spirit running around the house, and he actually followed me to work. I don't tell many people that, because it sounds crazy, but I could feel my dog running around in spirit around me, and coming up to me and jumping on me, and it was very subtle. But so what do you think about that, and as far as, do pets make their presence felt after death? Is that very common?
Yes, it is very common. One of the stories I have in the book, which is about a minister in the spiritualist church, often has pets coming through, or people who are mourning the loss of a pet, because, you know, we're attached to our animals, and for some people who do have an animal, when they lose them, the grief is just as strong as if it were, you know, a person. I mean, they are part of our family and our lives, so pets often do come through. And she seemed to suggest that pets often choose to go first as well. Sometimes the death of a pet in a family can actually be followed by the death of their owner or someone in the family. The idea being that the pet chooses to go first, and the pet will be there welcoming them. So, you know, a couple of books have been written just on this subject, you know, animal after-death communications. And again, for a lot of people, this isn't a strange thing, you know. All the people that, and animals included in that we are close to, would want to be in communication. And I think we tend to forget as well that animals are so much more intuitive and highly attuned than we are, that we tend to dismiss perhaps the fact that they might be better psychically connected to those forces than we are.
Right. Well, you know, I have a friend, a really good friend, actually, who's very, very skeptical of life after death, and I'm telling him all these stories that, you know, of near-death communication and, you know, out-of-body experiences and stuff like this, and his reasoning is this. He says that he doesn't believe because of what he calls the cockroach theory. He says there's never been a reported case of a cockroach ghost or bug ghosts or, you know, ghosts of very, very small animals. So do you think that they have an afterlife as well?
I think everything is part of consciousness. I mean, when we look at, you know, the whole life force on this planet and how everything is so interconnected, obviously it would be very difficult to know for certain anything. But I think everything is part of this consciousness and part of this cosmic force, and somehow or other gets reabsorbed into it. So while it's true perhaps nobody's heard of a cockroach, certainly, you know, I've heard of birds coming through,
true.
You know, with their owners. So very interesting story that I actually wrote about in the book was, you know, how a woman actually got in touch with a couple of friends that she hadn't seen for a while, and they were very upset at the time because their cockatoo had just died and didn't seem to have anything wrong with it, and they couldn't understand what had happened. And anyway, she phoned up a week later to check up and see how they were, and the husband had actually died of a massive heart attack, and they went to consult a medium, and the man came through to, you know, help his wife realize that he was still around, but he had the bird with him.
Hmm. Wow. Now, well,
so
I
was just going to say, I think, you know, we need to be sort of open-minded. Lots of people actually see their dogs or animals. Some people that have a near-death experience do. You know, they're met often by deceased relatives or loved ones, or it could be a pet.
Right. I've heard of cases of horses. And, you know, having had out-of-body experiences, when you go to the other side, there's trees there. There's, you know, streams with fish and... Oh, it's very, very much like this world. I think the entire world, in fact, has a counterpart to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, a continuum would probably be, like you say, it's just a higher vibration. I don't know, it's a mystery, but I think that definitely the other side is the superior world, the more permanent world, the more beautiful world, and this is just a, I guess, a pale reflection of what's really going on. Now, here's a question. Now, what kind of, do you think we are going to ever get proof that there is life after death? Because it seems to me we're getting awfully close. I think the best evidence we have now is, of course, all the accounts of ghosts and accounts from mediums. And a lot of those ghost shows on TV are getting some really remarkable footage. And particularly I'm impressed by EMF meters, which go off in the presence of a ghost who in some cases appears to be able to manipulate it so that they can answer yes and no questions and things like this. And then there's also, where you record the voices of ghosts on audio tape.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So where do you see the future of near-death research, and how are we ever going to get proof enough to convince the skeptics?
Well, I think it depends what kind of proof you're looking for. If you're looking for proof that something extraordinary has happened to these people, and they come back with a totally different outlook on life, then you only have to talk to the people concerned. If you're looking for scientific explanation, I think there's a lot of research. Dr. Peter Fenwick, who's a British neuropsychiatrist and has studied NDEs for the last 30 years, amongst many others, embraces very enthusiastically that, you know, they're looking as well to a spiritual connection to all of these things. So I think when you talk about proof, what we're trying to do perhaps is build a bridge between science and spirituality. There are many university projects. The University of Arizona, for example, works in this type of area. So I think there's a lot of research being done. How close we are, I don't know, because I'm not really scientifically involved. I do follow scientific news and things, but I'm not in that area myself. So one day perhaps, you know, we may be able to prove without a shadow of a doubt that life continues after death. But I think one of the main things is that, everybody I've ever spoken to has experienced something out of the normal. So we're all having sort of signs that there's something else going on. But like we said earlier, perhaps we don't talk about it, or perhaps our belief system or religious orientation, isn't sort of keen on that kind of outlook, or our family background, or the whole area of death being something to be ignored until it happens and then something to be forgotten as soon as possible. Perhaps we actually, need to look inside ourselves. I think that we have so many signs. Like you say, so many people are having after-death communications, ghostly apparitions, sightings. Something paranormal is always happening. And many people have experienced something along those lines. So I think that gives us a pretty good idea that there's definitely something else going on out there.
Right. I think it is actually pretty common. I remember my sister-in-law, she got into a car accident once, and she was describing what happened to me, and she started to describe how she ran out of the car and was running around to get people to come back to the car and get her kids out of the car who were, screaming and hurt. And the next thing she remembers, she's back in the car and someone's pulling her out.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at her, I'm like, Christy, was your seatbelt on? And she's like, well, yeah. And I'm like, but you were outside of the car running around? And that's when it dawned on her that she was describing a near-death experience. She hadn't even realized it. She thought she was actually physically outside of the car. But
yeah,
she couldn't have been.
I
she had a broken pelvis
what you
at the time.
Is often the way that people perhaps just, haven't even noticed. I mean, it's one of the things that we tend to, I think, you know, in society now, we're living lives that tend to be so removed from the natural rhythms that we see around us all the time that it's often very difficult to actually integrate an experience like that. I know for a lot of people that have had an NDE, now it's a lot simpler because there are organizations like the International Association of Near-Death Studies that do, you know, hold conferences, forums, research, stories, all the information you could possibly want. So IAMS groups are actually, you know, in probably every major city in the United States and a lot of different countries in the world. So a person doesn't have to be shy about describing an experience or even learning more or talking about what has actually happened in their own experience. So things are opening up, definitely, and you know, in the stories that I compiled for the book in the near-death experience section, I actually have the story of Larry Hagman, which most people would, you know as JR or I Dream of Jeannie or whatever.
Right.
You know, and he's a very interesting story because he's a successful actor. You know, he has wealth and power and what perhaps other people might enviously look at as a perfect life. And certainly on those outer layers, his life was perfect. He has a very good, strong marriage that has lasted a long time. But he was still curious about, you know, the search for meaning. And it became a bigger thing for him, you know, to find, to have more information. And he actually had two NDE-like experiences that are described in the book, and he himself became dramatically changed. I mean, he spends an awful lot of his time now working for various charitable organizations and has a very different outlook on life. And, you know, one of the things he says, you know, death is not the end. And I think this is the message that we certainly get from those who have had an NDE.
Right. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Anna Maria Hemingway, who has written a fascinating book, which is called Practicing Conscious Living and Dying, Stories of the Eternal Continuum of Consciousness, which has just been published by O Books. And you have a website. Would you like to give out your website?
Yes, I have a website. It's www.practicingconsciouslivinganddying.com. It's the title of the book. And I just want to say for anybody interested, the book actually is available from any good bookstore or from Amazon or any branches of Amazon. And it's readily available for anybody who wants to get any more information about it.
Very good. Wow. Now, what would you say are the main after effects of someone who has, like, a very, like, a core NDE, not just a minor one, but a really major one with all of the elements of going down the tunnel and going, meeting the relatives and seeing the light and having a near-death review and so on? What are the main after effects?
Well, I think that, you know, for most NDE survivors, they do describe this life review, and it's really quite an extraordinary thing when you think about it, because their whole lives are actually laid out before them, almost as they were watching a film, and, you know, they see what effect they had in the world and on the people around them, that when they were loving and compassionate and kind, how this rippled out and touched other people. And also, perhaps, when they weren't so compassionate or so loving, and how that spilled out and affected other people. So, One lady in the book, in Tiffany's story, actually described it as saying, I suddenly realized I needed to come back to make a better movie. And I think that that is one of the things that near-death experiences come back with, is that, you know, life is precious. For most of them, it's very difficult when they're told that they must return and that they have work to do. But when they do return and have managed to integrate the experience, which for some, you know, can be a little depressing to begin with, because they don't actually want to come back. They want to stay in this blissful, loving place that they have been enveloped in. But once they do, you know, they choose to live their lives very differently, often in service to other people. And one of the stories I wrote about in the book is a man who was a real estate banker, or rather real estate, worked in real estate and was a banker, had two failed marriages, was a workaholic, had a massive heart attack, and had a near-death experience. And when he returned, he knew that he had a mission, and it took him a while to realize that actually his mission, which a lot of near-death experiences often do get involved in, is working with the dying. And one of the other things that they often come back with is very enhanced telepathic, psychic, healing, creative abilities that perhaps they didn't have before. So it seems like they're stripped down from what they thought was important before, and come back with a whole different idea of how to live their lives, and certainly lose their fear of death.
Right. Well, what about like the white light? And do people come back becoming more religious and believing in God, or more spiritual, or what is your take on that?
I think that from research that has been carried out, and like I say, a lot of research, you know, has been done. The early pioneers like Dr. Kenneth Ring, Dr. Moody, Kubler-Ross, they all started compiling notes and accounts of near-death experiences, and that they came to find that this light was really a very central feature of the NDE.
Huh. Well, what do you suppose it is? I mean, what is the light? Is the light God?
I think the light, you know, for want of a better word, I mean, a lot of near-death experiences use different words. In a sense, we're sort of, you know, language doesn't sometimes have enough words to describe what has happened to them, because it just, you know, they paint the experience sometimes, or they speak about it, but it's still not enough to really convey exactly what has happened. The light, nothing is ever brilliant enough to describe the light, for example, but certainly this idea of the light perhaps being consciousness, you know?
Right.
For some people, they describe it as heaven or God or a higher sense or whatever. But this sense of connection and connectedness to this source seems like just a very expanded form of consciousness, and you know, this longing perhaps that we have to be in this brilliant light that is, you know, after the tunnel, the light is one of the main features of the NDE, is our longing for consciousness perhaps, and this continuation of consciousness, being conscious of consciousness, if you understand what I mean.
I do. Very interesting. You know what? Another universal, seems to me, a culturally universal feature of the near-death experience is the tunnel that so many people describe, or a valley. And What do you suppose that is? Is that just a symbolic thing? Is there a different tunnel for each person, or what is it?
I think it's sort of, it's interesting in a way, because the tunnel sometimes is dark as well. It's almost as though one has to come through the darkness to be able to come into the light. And the tunnel seems to really be a sort of bridge, metaphorically, between, the consciousness that earthly day-to-day consciousness and this expanded consciousness or this continuum. So the tunnel seems to be like part of the journey, and obviously, you know, there are very many parallels with the whole birth journey, you know, coming through the tunnel and out into life. So perhaps it wouldn't be surprising if we looked upon, you know, life and death as being the natural cycles of the life process, that we are being rebirthed at this moment of going through the tunnel and then being ushered, you know, into this most brilliant light. And and so it's a sort of very symbolic for us to kind of hear these descriptions and perhaps translate them into this idea of rebirthing, regeneration.
Right, right. Well, I wish that we could sort of, I don't know, it's just, it seems to me, while death is ultimately a good thing at the very end, leading up to it is so really scary, and sometimes there's a lot of suffering involved, and I don't understand why it has to be that way.
Well, I think, you know, the truth is that there's a mystery surrounding all of this. I mean, we can't just answer any of these questions. Lots of people have put theories forward that the soul is evolving, or perhaps, you know, illness and decay of the body are outer signs that the spirit is actually, you know, making its transition. So what we see when we look at somebody, especially someone we love, and we see decay of the body and we see somebody shrinking before our eyes and all of this, that is very, very upsetting and distressing. But at the same time, you know, they're shedding something. They're shedding the physical body and leaving that. And, you know, if we go back to the whole birth idea, when we think of ourselves being born, it's not really a particularly pleasant thing to see, you know, a baby being born. It's wonderful when they come out, but it's a painful process until that moment takes place. So I think we have to, you know, live with that mystery, but try and embrace this idea that, you know, we are beings housed in this physical body, and we don't understand everything. And obviously, as I say, those are very scary aspects, illness, severe illness. But I think we can try and sort of like investigate this idea of this shedding of the body.
Right, right. Well, you know, one book that reminds me of your book was about how great beings, you know, enlightened or very spiritually enlightened people have died. And it listed a bunch of cases of, you know, spiritual masters who eventually came to the end of their life. And it was amazing to watch the way they just stepped right into death gracefully and naturally, and in so many cases they knew it was coming, and they could see it. And so I totally think that your book is really timely and what people need, because that's the way I want to die. I don't see there's any reason to have death or disease, disease or decay of the body necessarily. And one case which comes to mind, I mean, there are several cases of near-death Native Americans who have actually not died the normal way, but basically ascended spiritually. Mm-hmm. So I think that death can be a very wonderful thing to look forward to, and there's no reason for there to be decay. Do you think that's a possibility?
Well, it would be wonderful if we all had that view, wouldn't it? Because if we started off with that idea, perhaps, you know, a lot of our suffering, which is obviously fear-based to a certain extent, like you say, these very enlightened people who do just step into this experience and move on or ascend, are freed from that. I don't know whether any studies have been done on near-death experiences, you know, when they do eventually make their full transition, but perhaps we might see the same thing again within them, that, you know, the whole process is not full of resistance. I think for some people that, you know, they hang on to life even when the quality of the life really, you know, has deteriorated to such a point because they're afraid to let go. And often another thing with a dying person will almost feel that they have to stay for the family who can't bear the idea of the loss. I think another thing is that if you are with a person, you know, to encourage them that it's okay for them to leave. And often just once these words have been spoken, the person will rapidly make a transition, and those end moments will be very peaceful and beautiful. And so, you know, it really is, I think it's like anything else in life, it really depends on how we perceive things to be and how we choose to deal with them.
Right. Another lady I know who had a near-death experience described in her experience that she actually went to a past life, and she actually relived it and saw how it affected this present life. I was wondering, what are your thoughts on reincarnation and past lives and how this fits into our continuum of life and death?
Well, again, very hard because we can't say without a shadow of a doubt, although, you know, research into reincarnated children, for example, Ian Stevenson did a lot of work in this area, and there were so many things, you know, when he was investigating that really almost proved that these stories must be true, you know. He compiled a book of his findings, and I think a veteran journalist was with him who was very skeptical, but at the end of this whole trip had to say that the evidence was almost overwhelming. So I think if we sort of stop thinking about, you know, I often feel that people almost think that the earth is still flat, that here we are down there, we look up and we see these other planets, but we're down here. But the truth of the matter is we are a round planet. You know, as the astronauts that actually landed on the moon said, when they looked back at the earth, they just saw this fragile planet. One of the things that struck them most was that how fragile it looked, and they saw the blue ocean and the brownness of the earth, and that actually we are out in infinite space and time. So why would not everything be sort of collectively kept in this experience of, you know, of constant time, that things could be rebirthed, many
right.
times, and certainly for some of the Eastern religions, you know, reincarnation is a firm belief.
Right. Well, I think we're reaching the point now where people have grown spiritually enough, at least some people, to embrace this idea of conscious living and dying. And it reminds me of a story of another friend of mine told me, who said that she actually remembered her past life, her immediate past life, because she said that she remembered being in a car with her parents when their car hit the fence and went over a bridge and into the water, and she drowned. And she says she immediately went out of her body, went up into the heavenly realms, and then dived right back down into another body where she was born. She says there was just almost no transition at all.
Mm.
So she consciously not only lived and died, she consciously lived and died and lived.
Yeah. Well, that's a very interesting story, and I'm sure that there are probably many more like that. Again, you know, many people do past life therapies and are firmly convinced that they access another life. So we've got all of these different things going on around us, you know. I think if we stopped separating them all and sort of thought they were all sort of part of the same thing, that might help realize that there's just another, you know, another level of consciousness to see everything we perceive through our senses and perhaps through our spiritual senses as well.
Right, right. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Anna Maria Hemingway, and we're talking about her amazing book, Practicing Conscious Living and Dying, Stories of the Eternal Continuum of Consciousness, which has just been published by O Books. And you want to give out your website again?
Yes, it's www.practicingconsciousliving and dying.com. So it's the title of the book. And for anyone that's interested, it gives a full list of all the reviews and endorsements, more information on the book itself.
All right. What I love about your book is it not only, you know, explains the near-death experience, but it has personal first-hand stories, which, I don't know, just hearing people's own stories, I think, is what is most inspiring, for me at least, and really gives me comfort knowing that this isn't all there is.
Yeah. But, well, I think, you know, story is the most powerful way we have, really, of telling each other. I mean, when we look at the great myths, and there are many resurrection myths and nature myths that are all pointing to the same thing that the near-death experience I was talking about, you know, it's worth remembering that the NDE isn't just a sort of something that's come up, you know, now. It's actually has been recorded since the 8th century. There was a story from the 8th century by the Venerable Bede, who wrote a book about the English church and people, and he recounted a near-death experience. The great philosopher Plato closed the Republic with the myth of Ur, again, a near-death experience. So, you know, this isn't something new. Perhaps we're hearing more about it right now, but I think, as I said before, that I try and stress in the book that this information is sort of sacred information that we can access through, you know, many things, the near-death experience, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, this whole idea that life is a continuation, you know, and that rebirth is part of these ancient philosophies, and that we've lost our connection, perhaps, to remembering that, the way we are living now. And, you know, it may well be that the near-death experience are sort of like an army of people on the earth, perhaps even chosen to have this experience, to come back, and to help other people transform through hearing their accounts and seeing the new way they're living their lives.
Right, right. Well, maybe the fact that so many people are out of touch with their spirituality is what's causing so many of our world's problems with greed and poverty and all this. Well, Anna Maria, we have only a few minutes left. Are there any like last messages you want to give to our listeners?
Well, I think for anybody that, you know, wants to kind of expand their idea a little bit about the word death, which is, you know, so fearful, perhaps thinking of it as maybe perhaps being more of a transition. We often hear that term used more and more now, and I think it has a much better ring to it, that perhaps we're just transitioning into another form of consciousness. And certainly for anybody, you know, that wants to read first-hand accounts of stories whereby death in some form or another has really been a transformative experience, they may well, you know, like to read the stories in the book, because as you said earlier, you know, it's good, and I have done this at the beginning of all these sections, to give as much information and history and, you know, telling people a lot about what I'm writing about. But it is the stories of real-life people, you, me, somebody down the road, you know, that makes this all actually become more real for us.
Right, right. Wow. Well, that's pretty much our time, Anna Maria. It's been amazing speaking with you, and while your book is, I'm sure it's going to do well. I mean, Betty Eady's book was a bestseller for, I think, over a year or more, and the near-death books do really well. I think it's a great subject, and people are really interested in it. And I want to just thank you very much for coming on to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and it's been great talking to you. And thank you very much.
You're welcome. Well, everyone, that's our show tonight. I hope you've enjoyed it. We've been talking about near-death experiences and Anna Maria Hemingway's book, Practicing Conscious Living and Dying, which you can get on Amazon.com or in bookstores near you, or you can go to her website and learn more about it, which is the title of the book, Practicing Conscious Living and Dying.com. Thank you all for listening to the show. I hope you can join us next week when we have another exciting guest. And thanks also to Don and Seth and all the gang at BBS Radio. That's our show tonight, and have a great evening.